Tours of Man?
Yeah, that's where we're going to go. So today is June 15th, our last class in Mishnah, Tractate Papakama at Sheret Israel, and it's Chapter 4, Mishnah 2. So let's begin, before we look at the Mishnah, let's look in the Chumash. So we said we're in Parshat Mishpatim, the book of Exodus, Chapter 21, and we're going to read, now what we read when we started this 6, 7, 8 months ago. The same verses in the Chumash, Chapter 21, beginning with verse 28. When an ox gores a man or a woman to death, the ox shall be stoned and its flesh shall not be eaten, but the owner of the ox is not to be punished. If, however, that ox has been in the habit of goring, and its owner, though warned, has failed to guard it, and it kills a man or a woman, the ox shall be stoned, and its owner too shall be put to death. If a ransom is laid upon him, he must pay whatever is laid upon him to redeem his life. Let's end there. And then we turn the page. We're still in chapter 21.
I don't understand number 30 there. If a ransom is paid upon him, laid upon, if a ransom is laid upon whom?
Well, the interpretation that we've seen is that the if is not halachically an if, it's a when.
Okay.
Now there's ransom is laid upon him, and in doing so, his life is redeemed. In other words, it's only in a theoretical sense that he's put to death, but practically speaking.
So he can speaking. Be actually paid for not being put to death.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes. So when we go on to the next page, it's still chapter 21. We're looking at verse 35 and 36. Verse 35, when a man's ox injures his neighbor's ox and it dies, they shall sell the live ox and divide its price. They shall also divide the dead animal. If, however, it's known that the ox was in the habit of goring, and its owner has failed to guard it, he must restore ox for ox, but shall keep the dead animal. And we talked in the past that we're talking there about chatzi nezek and nezek shalem, about half damage and full damage, depending if the ox is a tam or a muad. Now, let's put together the information we have from these two sections in the Torah, and realize what we have and what we don't have. So one is the matter of an ox getting an ox. The other is an ox getting a man. But I use the word getting, and I didn't use a different word, because I want to now focus on what does that getting mean. In both cases, it's about the injured ox and the injured man dying. And in both cases, it's about death. And there's no mention here in the whole Torah of an ox goring and injuring an ox, or an ox goring and injuring but not killing a man. That whole thing is missing. We only know here about oxen killing other oxen and killing human beings. So we have to ask ourselves, what's going to be the law when an ox doesn't kill but only injures? So as far as an ox injuring but not killing another ox, I can easily say to myself, well, it doesn't really matter if the ox killed or the ox injured, because from the point of view of law, what was called was a monetary damage. What do I care if the ox killed or just injured? You have to assess how much damage was done and then pay half or full, depending on if it's a tam or a muad. That makes sense. So therefore, as far as the verses, in the second paragraph we just read, verses 35 and 36, when a man ox injures his neighbor's ox and it dies, I can say to myself, the fact that it died, that's just the normal situation. But if it didn't die, the law should be the same, because in both cases, what was done was damage, an ox. Now, it's one person's property, damage another person's property. And therefore, I can understand whether the damage is killing, or it's just maiming, or it's just any other type of damage. The same laws are going to be. Tom pays half, and Muad pays full. However, what about the case of an ox damaging but not killing a human being? Then I have no idea what to do. Because the case, good morning, because the case that talked about an ox killing a human being, well, that's a case that's sui generis, it's unique. It's about killing a human being. That's not a property issue, that's not a monetary issue, that's life. It's not like killing an ox, where I can say that that's equivalent to maiming an ox, that's equivalent to hurting an ox. Whether you kill an ox or you Hurt an ox, it's still monetary damage. But a human being, killing is one thing, and injuring is a completely different thing. So therefore, I don't know from the verses, when the Torah talks about an ox killing a human being, I don't know what the law is going to be when an ox hurts a human being. The law that says when the ox kills a human being, if it was a muad, that the owner of the ox is liable for death, that certainly doesn't apply when the ox only injured a human being. So what applies? Where does the Torah say any law about an ox injuring a human being but not killing? It's an open question.
So let me see if I can put it right. I'm sorry we don't have a lawyer here to tell us what American civil law is, because I know that there's compensation. There are compensation systems.
Figure out how many hours of work they were.
Well, yeah, if you lose a leg and as a result of it, if you lose a limb. But are you saying that there's a way? Are you implying that there's a way of deducing what would happen in case of injury?
I'm just saying that from the Torah itself, we don't know.
You're saying that there's no place in the Torah, that deals with injury.
It talks about an ox or any other agency of Adam, of man, injuring a human being. It's only about killing a human being.
Where now, have the eye, a knife or an eye?
That's Adam. That's when I take out your eye. Right, that's Adam. Remember, we learned there are different categories of nesek, of damage. There's when your ox does it. There's when your fire does it.
Okay.
There's when you do it directly. There's when you dig a pit and your pit causes damage. There's when you cause damage. Eye for eye, tooth for tooth, all that is about when you cause damage to someone else. But what about when your ox causes damage to someone else? Right. So, we don't know. So you might say, we can deduce it from the case of the ox killing an ox. When the case of the ox killing an ox, that's a case of damage. Even though the ox died, it's not a loss of life. Loss of life is the category of loss of human life.
Loss of human life.
Right. So it could be that when an ox damages, hurts, injures a human being that doesn't kill, we'll learn that from the case of the ox killing an ox. Could be. Which would mean that in the case of an ox hurting a human being, and not killing, we would have the matter of tam and muad, the differentiation between tam and muad, just like we have it in an ox killing an ox. In other words, property, tam and muad. So these are basically open questions as far as the Chumash goes. It's not open as far as the halakha goes. I'm just telling you in the Chumash, we don't really have a basis here. So now, let's look at things we've seen in the Mishnah already. We have seen in the Mishnah something related to this. And the place I'm going to show you to look at is something we saw only a few weeks ago. Chapter 3, Mishnah Chet. Mishnah 8. Look at the very end of chapter 3, Mishnah 8.
That's page 38.
38, thank you, Mo.
38?
The very end of the 8th Mishnah of the 3rd chapter.
I'm not fast. I thought you were going the wrong direction. Okay.
Now this Mishnah doesn't answer our questions, but it assumes an answer to our questions.
I was one page off. It should be page 37.
Page 37. Okay. Chapter 3, Mishnah 8. So this Mishnah talks about... let's read the beginning of the Mishnah. We've seen this Mishnah already. But let's read it again. The very beginning of Mishnah 8 says, Shnei Shvarim Tamim Shechavlu Ze Etze. Two oxen that are tam that damaged each other. Right, we talked about that, right? So anyway, It's very interesting that you remember the grammatical point, that pronunciation that we discussed then. So anyway, this Mishnah talks about two oxen damaging each other. Not killing, but damaging. Right? Chavlu. How's your translation there? Does it say injured each other?
Yeah.
It hurt? So, and then from the discussion we see that the Mishnah is assuming that even though the Torah says oxen that killed each other and differentiates between tam and wad, the Mishnah talks about even oxen that chavlu, that hurt each other but didn't kill, but gives the same differentiations between tam and wad. So that's fine. An oxen killing another ox or an ox hurting, it doesn't matter, it's a property damage. But what about human beings? So going on in the Mishnah, it talks about v'chein shnei anashim shechavlu ze b'ze, and so two people that hurt each other. And then it talks about another few words, is adam b'mu'ad u'mu'ad b'adam, a man that injured an ox mu'ad and a mu'ad that injured a man. Right? There was a fight between an ox and a man. They each hurt each other, this one more than the other. But anyway, what you see there is that it's a case of a mu'ad, of an ox injuring a man. And the Mishnah treats it with these other cases of, like, just injuring an ox, injuring a man. It's in the same category. What I'm trying to say is the Mishnah doesn't tell us, but it assumes that an ox injuring a man is just like an ox injuring an ox. That's my whole point. Right? In other words, we have in the Torah two parshiot, two paragraphs. One is about ox killing human beings. That's separate. Another paragraph is the ox killing an ox. And from the case of ox killing an ox, we learn out the same law to ox injuring an ox and also to ox injuring a man. All that's in the category of property. In other words, the parsha, the paragraph, the clause of ox killing ox is the paradigm for learning out property damage. When ox damages property or ox damages man, it's the same thing. It's about injury. It's about something that you can quantify monetarily. As opposed to the other clause about ox killing human beings, that's a separate thing. It's only about ox killing human beings. When ox injures human beings, it comes under the parsha of the ox killing another ox. It's all about monetary loss. However, after saying all that, we would say, okay, so that means that if you have an ox that three times hurt a human being, that would make it a mu'ad. Because we're in the category that distinguishes between tam and mu'ad. Whereas if the ox hurt a human being only twice and not three times, it still would be a tam. Nafkamina, practical difference being whether it pays half or full. Okay? After saying all that, look at the last line of Mishnah 8. Chapter 3, Mishnah 8. Again, this is review in order to do today's Mishnah. The last line there says, Rabbi Akiva Omer. Does everyone see the place?
Yeah. Yeah.
Rabbi Akiva Omer, Af Tam Shechaval Ba'adam Mishalim B'motar Nezek Shalem. Says Rabbi Akiva, even a tam that injured a man pays the difference, and the difference, we're not going into that, that was the subject of that Mishnah, Nezek Shalem, full damage. So Rabbi Akiva says that a tam that injures a man pays full damage. Right. He's strict. In other words, the matter of tam and mu'ad, that the tam pays half and the mu'ad pays full, says Rabbi Akiva, that only applies
to animals.
Mm-hmm. To animals hurting or killing animals. But when the animal kills a man, sorry, take it back. Injures a man. There's no such thing as a distinction between tam and muad. Immediately pays nezek shalem. And the truth is,
based on what? What is his asmachta?
I was about to say that I don't remember. Perhaps I knew that when we learned this Mishnah 4 weeks ago, but I don't know it now. And I don't remember if I did know it or forgot it, or I just never knew it. Sorry about that. But that all is the background to today's Mishnah. So let's move to today's Mishnah, which is chapter 4, Mishnah 2. You ready for the last sling of the season? Chapter 4, Mishnah 2. We have the page?
Yes.
Can anyone call out the page number?
Sure.
42.
42,
I think so. Yeah.
42.
Okay, so here we go. It says, Shor shahu mu'ad l'mino, ve'no mu'ad l'she'eno mino. Let's understand that. An ox that is mu'ad for its species, for its type, ve'no mu'ad l'she'eno mino. And it's not mu'ad for that which is not its species. So that means that I have an ox, and three times it's gored, and it's been brought to court and been forewarned.
But it's gored another ox.
Yeah, and then we realize that all of the three cases in which it gored, it didn't gore a monkey, and it didn't gore a cat, and not a dog, and not even a rabbit. In all those cases, it gored another ox. So it's mu'ad for goring oxen, but it's not mu'ad. We have no proof that it likes to gore cats, or dogs, or monkeys.
That's kind of strange, because an ox that is so aggressive that it will hit another ox, I would say would be aggressive to other anybody, anything that moves.
Right, I understand. That's a good point. That's a good point. But let's just go on. Mm-hmm. So, second clause, mu'ad la'adam, ve'no mu'ad la'beina. It is forewarned for men, but not forewarned for animals. In other words, this another ox that's been brought to court, gored three times. We have witnesses, but we realize that all three of the times it gored human beings, and it didn't gore animals. That's the reality. Another case, mu'ad l'ktanim ve'inim mu'ad l'gdolim. It's mu'ad for goring minors and not for goring adults. And that might refer to goring children, human beings, but not adults. It might refer to goring baby oxen, but not to grown oxen. It's not clear. It just says minors and not adults. It could refer to animals, could refer to human beings. So here's this ox that we brought it to court, and it gored three times. We realize all three times it gored calves, but it didn't gore grown oxen. So the law is going to be, in all these three cases that we just read right now, when a fourth time the ox gores, but it gores a different category of
a being
that it hasn't gored in the past, what's going to be its law? It's going to be mu'ad or tam. Let's read what it says here. So the law is, et shehu mu'ad lo, mishalem nizik shalem. That which it's forewarned for, if it gores that a fourth time, mishalem nizik shalem, it pays full. Vetcheino mu'adlo, but that which it's not forewarned for, mishalem chatzi nezik, only pays half nezik. So then this ox that three times gored, let's say, human beings, the fourth time it gores an ox, it's only going to have to pay how much?
Half.
And this ox that three times gored a rabbit, if the fourth time it gores a dog, it looks like also it's only going to have to pay half. That's what it seems to be. Right?
Yeah.
Although I'm not sure about that. I'm not sure. It might be that it's only... Right. Literally, I could be wrong. Only if it gored oxen three times, and the fourth time it gores a dog, then it doesn't have to pay. Question is, how far do we go with these differentiations? Do we say three times it gored a red ox, and now the fourth time it gored a black ox, so it's not mu'ad? How far do we go with this? And it's not clear. Now, let me ask a trick question, which is not so tricky because I gave you the answer just 5 minutes ago. Just have to remember, which Tana which rabbi of the Mishnaic period does what we just read not go in accord with, doesn't jive with, doesn't fit in with his opinion?
Akiva?
Of course. Because Rabbi Akiva says, right, there's no differentiation as far as oxen goring human beings between Tam and Mu'at. So then, what is this thing we have here about being Mu'ad for Adam? According to Rabbi Akiva, there's no such thing as being Mu'ad for Adam. Every ox, the minute it kills a human being, it's already paying like a Mu'ad. And therefore, when it says in our Mishnah that it's Mu'ad for Ketanim, for minors, but not for adults, according to Rabbi Akiva, that could only apply to animals. It couldn't apply to human beings. And human beings, it's to begin with, it's always paying like a mu'ad. And again, all this is about, it's not about killing. All this is about damaging, because there's a difference. It tells you how much you pay here. Nezek shalem, pay full. I'm sorry, I want to make it clear. When I say it's about damaging and not killing, I mean human beings. If it is about human beings, like it says mu'ad ladam, and not mu'ad labeima, the concept of mu'ad for human being is not about killing them, it's about damaging. If you kill them, there's no damage money paid. There's not half or full. It's not damage money paid at all. Rather, we pay kofer, remember? If it's a tam, you don't pay anything when you kill a human being. As we read in the verses just 10 minutes ago, when it's a tam, you don't pay anything when you kill a human being. The ox is just stoned because you don't want a murderous ox around. If it's mu'ad, then not only is the ox stoned, but the owner has to lose his life, and we don't kill him, but we demand of him kofar, ransom. But it's not paying for damage. When a human being is killed, there's no damage money. We don't put a price tag on a human life. So when we talk here about paying money, if human beings are involved at all, it's not about killing them, it's about hurting them.
So what is then the purpose of the kofar?
So the kofar is not to reimburse the family of the deceased. The kofar is indicative of the fact that I, the owner of the goring ox, deserve to lose my life, but the Torah allows me to symbolically pay that off. And remember, we talked actually then about the fact that another place the Torah says you can never put a price tag on life, right? We saw that if someone kills another person, you can never redeem that for ransom. Either the person who did the murderer is either to be executed or to go free. But there's no such thing as paying money.
But it happens like in the Arab world, that happens. Sometimes the United States pays for somebody who they kill accidentally.
Right, right. And so we don't have that.
Accidentally or not accidentally.
Yeah, and when we had in this class Charlie Blau, he had mentioned that in American law there's also such a thing as payment for wrongful death. But the halakha doesn't have that, except in the case of not you killing someone, but your property killing someone, right? Then we have this kofar.
Kofar,
it's not payment for wrongful death, but it's indicative of your own guilt.
And the kofar is paid to whom?
To
the
family.
Paid to what?
Paid to whom?
Yeah.
To the family of the dead person. It's the logic.
And I'm sorry to say that I don't... That I don't know.
I know. I mean, if it was paid to the family, then it would be a kind of like a damage, right? So it must be paid to the community or something.
I understand what you're saying. I just don't know. Too bad, all the things I don't know. Okay.
You're saying that we don't know.
Right, that's certainly true.
We don't know this.
That's certainly true. Okay, so let's see now. We're going to look now at
Rabbi.
Yes.
I mean, okay, so we don't know that. What difference does it make in our lives that we don't know the answer to that question? It doesn't make any difference at all. To me, it seems to me.
Okay.
I have a little trouble with the relevance of this. Now, if I lived in that time and I had oxen, and that was my livelihood and all, I can understand that, all of this, but it seems like this is not relevant to me today.
So you would like to Answer?
I believe this law influences the dog bite law. If you have a dog that has bitten once, the dog does not have to be destroyed. Mm-hmm. But if it's shown that the dog has bitten more than once mm-hmm. and bites again, the government can take the dog and have it destroyed. Does that follow about the same line? So I mean, it's relevant today mm-hmm. because we've had people being killed by packs of dogs mm-hmm. where people have just let their dogs run, mm-hmm. which would be the negligence of the owner, like the negligence of the owner of the
I hear. Yeah, there's certainly a relationship. I don't know if there's a influence.
Well, I don't know if there's an influence, but that I think that would be like a modern kind of like a drunk driver.
Yeah.
If he's involved in one accident, you know, he may get fined and
right.
asked to go to
right.
rehab, but if he's involved in more than one accident, he'll have his license pulled mm-hmm. and put into jail. They don't kill him. Mm-hmm. Darn. But I think it's done mm-hmm. in stages. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it
so
has a lot to do with
negligence. To our laws today.
Right. I think a lot of it has to do with negligence on the part of the culpable person.
Okay, so I want to add to that. Okay, yes.
I don't understand why we cannot study these things per se, bishmam, just to understand how the Jews, how legislative was in that time, to understand how they thought in that time, and then from that also deduct about Jewish ethics. There's a lot of Jewish ethics here, okay. Directly and indirectly. That's what I want to learn, you know, mm-hmm. whether it has direct relevance to us today or not. Mm-hmm. I just want to learn it per se.
Okay.
I would say that three things have been said. There's the question of direct relevance, and can we find direct relevance? And then there's the question of extrapolating Jewish values from here and reminding ourselves to be responsible for our acts and for our property. And then there's the third level. I think Jasmine mentioned two levels. There's the third level of Torah Lishma, of Torah for its own sake. And from my particular religious perspective, what I was taught is that any piece of Torah that I don't know, I feel I'm missing something. It doesn't matter if it was relevant 5 years ago but not today, or relevant 1,000 years ago but not today, or perhaps never relevant. There's lots of the Torah that was never relevant, that was never put into practice. But it's part of Torah. And I really can't, in a rational sense, explain to you mm-hmm. why you should want to know it. Mm-hmm. But the way I was brought up from the age of 18 to the age of 30, sitting in yeshiva, was that a Jew's goal in life is to know the whole Torah. That's what you do. Mm-hmm. We say the Talmud Torah keneged kulam. Learning Torah is the most important mitzvah. And that doesn't mean that learning how to apply Torah is the most important mitzvah. It means just knowing Torah, just being in the process of learning more and more Torah, and eventually knowing the whole Torah, that's the biggest mitzvah. Even if it has no direct relevance, and even if in theory it would have no connection to Jewish ethics and to behavior, but it has its own intrinsic significance. That's why they call Jews the people of the book, because they study for no reason. Right? Because study is a value in of itself. Using your mind and delving into Torah and looking for the deeper possibilities and knowing what the rabbis said 1,000 years ago and what they're going to say another 5 years and what they're saying right now, all that process of intellectual development and delving into the Torah of God, that is in and of itself the ultimate Jewish value. Of course, there are also other Jewish values. Fulfilling the law is also a value, but it's a separate value. And this goes so far as to the following. There's a very, very famous interpretation, and I don't want to attribute it incorrectly, so I won't tell you who I think said it, but there's a very, very famous interpretation that is in general spoken and handed over in the dynasty of Brisk, in the Talmudic dynasty of Brisk, that if you study Torah, hold on to your chairs about this. Mm-hmm. If you study Torah for the purpose of learning how to fulfill it, you're not fulfilling the mitzvah of studying Torah. Mm-hmm. You're fulfilling the mitzvah, preparation for that mitzvah. For example, when we learned Masechet Sukkah, Tractate Sukkah, and we learned about how to build a sukkah or how to know what a kosher etrog is, and when we did that, if we had in mind, this is going to help me when the holiday of Sukkot comes, I know how to build a sukkah, I know how to find the kosher etrog, if that was your intention, then at that moment when we were studying, you were not, according to this interpretation, you were not fulfilling the mitzvah of Talmud Torah, you're not fulfilling the mitzvah of learning Torah, you're fulfilling the mitzvah of etrog, of sukkah, but not the mitzvah of Talmud Torah. Talmud Torah is when there's no relevance, by definition. Only if there's no relevance, then is it completely relevant to the mitzvah of Talmud Torah. Intellectual collection, connection Torah for its own sake.
Okay, I have a question about that. When we were studying the etrog and all that, I didn't have an intention of doing it because I never do it.
Great. So then it was real Talmud Torah.
Okay, there we go. You see.
Very good.
Now you also have to do it, but that's something separate. That's something separate.
When I was in high school, we were studying Talmud, and you know, we were young teenagers, and we studied the Masechet Bava Kama, and it was talking about a wall between two neighbors, and there was a long discussion. This one said this, and this one, and we were like, oh dear God, now. But it was cool to say that we didn't care, it was relevant to us, and but I. Some of us, okay, me including, we secretly enjoyed it. It wasn't, we didn't care about the walk, okay?
Yeah.
But it was the arguments, yes, and the language and the thinking, the people of it that that we enjoyed.
Mm-hmm.
And you do it for Shem Shamayim, right? That's why you do it, essentially. Whether it has relevance or not. I think there are a lot of tapim in the Talmud. I think that they talk about a mouse who takes a breadcrumb. And,
yep.
You know.
First chapter of Masechet Pesachim.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, how many mice do we have these days that drag breadcrumbs around, right?
We have cockroaches that drag breadcrumbs.
Yes.
Okay, thank you for the opportunity to talk about that. Okay, but now back to the Mishnah. Ah, goodness, I don't remember where we were in the Mishnah. Oh, I remember now. Very good. Okay. Let's go on. In reading the Mishnah, we didn't go on. In the middle of the Mishnah, it says, Amru lifnei Rabbi Yehuda. They said before Rabbi Yehuda, which is not the normal statement of X said to Y, or they said to Rabbi Akiva. It says they said before Rabbi Akiva, which probably means they were sitting at his feet. That is, it's students who asked Rabbi Akiva.
Rabbi Judah.
Thank you. Thank you, Mom. Just to keep you on your toes. Amru lifnei Rabbi Yehuda. Harei shahaya mu'ad l'shabbatot veino mu'ad l'chol. ? Behold that it was mu'ad for Shabbat and not mu'ad l'chol. Not mu'ad for weekdays. In other words, we have this ox that three times been dragged in front of the court because it gored. And again, this goring is apparently not about killing human beings. It's rather about hurting them or hurting animals or killing animals. But it's not about killing human beings. Because then there wouldn't be a question of how much money you pay. And we notice after it's been in court three times that all three times the goring was on Shabbat. So then we wonder if when the fourth time it gores, if it's on a Sunday, perhaps you'll have to pay. Perhaps you'll only have to pay half and not whole, chatzi and not shalim, because you can say this ox really isn't mu'ad for goring on Sundays. It's only mu'ad for goring on Shabbatot. That's going to be a good question. Good morning, Miranda.
Good morning.
And you say to yourselves, wait a second. What actually are these students asking? Are they just playing a joke here?
Mm-hmm.
Right? And again, I emphasize, it's the students asking the teacher. It's not a discussion between two colleagues. Amru lifnei Rabbi Yehuda. And you notice this matter, and now I'm asking a question, I want everyone to look inside. This matter of the ox being mu'ad for Shabbat, but not for weekdays, is fundamentally different than all the other differential mu'adim we've just had. How is it fundamentally different?
Well, it deals now with a specific day.
As opposed to?
As opposed to just generally.
No, be more specific. As opposed to?
It, it deals with Shabbat as opposed to the sixth day of the week.
But the earlier three cases we dealt with,
is it also
is it towards its own kind or towards?
So define it conceptually now. What's the difference?
Well, because before that he was goring something that was alive, whether it's an animal or a human, and so that's the differentiation that we were making. But now it's something abstract. I mean, it's not so abstract for Jews, but it is still.
Okay, very good. You're getting there, but you could be more specific.
Definition of mino. What is mino?
Well, there was mino. There was Adam and Beima. There was Ktanim and Gdolim, minors and adults. In all three of the cases in which we have the law listed in the Mishnah, as opposed to the case we're now dealing with about Shabbat and Chol, conceptualize the difference between the three cases and the one case. And Mo started us in a direction, and Rina kept us on that direction. We're almost there.
Well,
it's really simple. It's not hard. We've done harder things in this class.
One second. I think I've got it. One is, as I was saying, one is live, and
the other is abstract.
And the other one is a thing.
The other one is a thing. Shabbat
well,
is a thing.
No, it's not a thing. It is. But it's not alive. It's not.
Very good. You're right. So now just define it more.
Uh-huh.
On the one hand, you have the killing of a. Of its own species or not of its own species. Then you have the or the herding, and then you have the herding of a man as opposed to an animal. Then you have the herding of a minor as opposed to an adult. And now you have herding on Shabbat.
Or not Shabbat.
So what's the difference between the three and the one, conceptually?
The
violation of Shabbat laws.
Yeah, but it's, the person who is responsible is not the ox, is the owner of the ox.
Of course.
Because the ox doesn't know what is Shabbat.
Of course, but wait, no, wait a second. You guys are not, you have to focus on this.
Okay.
Oh, it's so easy. You're gonna slap yourselves.
Really?
The first three cases, we're dealing with the object that is hurt. In the last case, we're dealing with, you called it abstract.
Time.
We're talking about time. This is apples and oranges. And perhaps it's true that an ox can be muad for goring a certain object, a certain thing, and not a different type of thing. But does that mean that an ox can be muad for goring a certain time and not a different time? It's two different levels of discourse. Here we're talking about, again, the object of the goring. Here we're talking about the timing of the goring. That's why when the students ask what they ask, they're really not sure what their teacher's going to say. Can you extrapolate and say, since there's such a thing as a differential goring vis-a-vis the object of the goring, does that mean there's differential goring as far as the timing of the goring? Perhaps not.
Well, because they missed the whole thing. I mean, they missed the whole reason for doing that. I think they were trying to look into the nature of the ox and not. I think that's what they're trying to do, but it's a difficult thing to try and not to make the ox so guilty so that the. And how do you charge the owner for the guilt of the ox? So you have to be very careful of how you label the ox, whether you label him aggressive, very aggressive, and so on and so forth. And I think that's where they want to,
okay,
to get to.
There might be an effort here to limit liability, because we don't want oxen to be in the category of muad.
Yeah, but so the difference was there rather than with the difference of apples and oranges, but when they introduced Shabbat.
So let's ask a question now. So what do you think the answer is going to be? The answer to the students asked, is there such a thing as an ox that's muad for Shabbat but not muad for Sundays or Mondays? And the answer is going to be,
no.
There shouldn't be any difference.
No. The ox doesn't have a mind, right?
Can anyone think of a reason why there should be a difference? If you are an ox,
Yes, well, just on Shabbat you wouldn't plow, right?
That's the thing.
You also plow the fields, and on Shabbat it's forbidden. It's an av melacha.
Yeah, so think about that. If you're an ox, and on Shabbat you don't work, for three times you have gourd on Shabbat. And it might just be that you like to go on Shabbat because you have nothing else to do. You're bored. But during the week, you're at work. You have no strength to gore.
Well, but basically the owner is the one who controls that.
But again, there's ox psychology here. So that actually makes sense, that an ox could be psychologically psyched to gore on Shabbatot, but not to gore on weekdays. Can you think of another reason that an ox himself might differentiate between Shabbat?
Oh yeah. Well, I'm not an animal. I'm not a herdsman, but I would expect that it's possible that on Shabbat the oxen might be in an enclosed space rather than in the field, and then they're much closer to each other.
That's true.
The food could be different.
The food could be different. Okay. Now, that's all good. Let me just bring up another possibility. What about if we're talking about an ox who gores human beings? Again, not killing them, but just damaging them. Could there be a reason that an ox might prefer to gore on Shabbat than on weekdays? Why?
Does the man not carry...
Because there's differences in the way the people act on Shabbat. So perhaps there's something they do on Shabbat that attracts the ox to gore them, but that doesn't exist on the weekday. So in this context, I want to see two commentaries that I brought. And they are on the bottom, I'm sorry, the top of the back side. It says C. You see it says C there? Mu'ad l'shabbatot in Hebrew. And then I have one is Rashi, and the other is the Talmud of the Land of Israel. We call the Talmud Yerushalmi. Look at these two interpretations. Rashi says, so we're going to the right-hand side, where it says Rashi al ha-Mishnah, Rashi on the Mishnah, and Rashi brings the Dibur Matril from the Mishnah, the opening phrase from the Mishnah, Harehu mu'ad l'shabbatot. Behold, he is mu'ad for Shabbat. Says Rashi, Lefi shehu batel mimlacha, v'zacha dato alav. Because the ox is batel mimlacha, he's, how do you say that in English? He gets a rest from work. And now to translate the last three words, it's going to take me a while to think of a good translation. And the ox is full of himself.
Yeah, in other words, it's funny. It's a funny expression. Yeah. Zchuach dat, when you kind of, not smug, I don't know.
It's smug, yeah, that's good, smug. Yeah. The ox is smug on Shabbat, because human beings can't work him. He's kind of his own man, so he does his own thing. He gores only on Shabbat. That's the way Rashi explains the psychology of the ox, according to this opinion. And then we have a different approach in the Talmud Yerushalmi. If the next line says, Talmud Yerushalmi, Masechet, I say I made a mistake, I wrote Maveket. Should be Masechet Baba Kama, Daf Yud Tet Amud Bet. Let me just take my pen and correct this. That should be Masechet. And what it actually says there in the Yerushalmi is the following. Havinan Savrin Meimar. Which means we were thinking to say, my ta'ama, what's the reason? De Rabbi Yehuda, of Rabbi Yehuda, who has this matter, right, with his students of the ox only being mu'ad for Shabbat. Mekevan du chamilon levushin nikiin od hu mishane date. Since that he sees us, this is Aramaic of the land of Israel, which is different than the Aramaic of Babylonia. Since that he sees us levushim nikiyim, wearing clean clothes, odu mishaneh date, therefore he changes his approach. In other words, the oxen is used to seeing people wear work clothes. Suddenly, on Shabbat, they're wearing red and yellow and white. Wow, this is exciting, and the ox gets excited, and he goes and gores.
Oh, he may be wearing, they may be wearing red.
Right.
Yeah.
There you go.
That's why I said red.
Red.
But
uh-huh.
In the,
oh, you did say red.
He said red.
Yes. Yes.
But I think it says later that you're not supposed to wear a shirt. Where is this? In the,
not supposed to?
Wear red shirts. It says it, but it's much later, not at that time.
Right. There's a later discussion if women should not wear red.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Well, but that's not at that time, right?
But why? In general, on Orient Shabbat?
Because it was used by men, I assume it was a man's. It's in context with women not wearing men's clothes.
Okay, so I don't know.
And that was, but that was not at that time. That red was considered male color, right?
I don't know anything. And again, it doesn't say red. I just made that up to illustrate, mm-hmm. right? To illustrate the fact that we have here two different approaches to animal psychology, right? Why would an ox gore only on Shabbat mm-hmm. and not during the weekday? Either because the ox experiences a different labor routine, or because the ox sees people differently. They're acting differently and they're dressed differently. So really, it does make some sense that ox might gore only on Shabbat and not on the weekday. And indeed, after the students asked Rabbi Yehuda, is there such a thing as an ox being muad for Shabbat and not being muad for the weekday? His answer is, let's read his answer. His answer is, Amar lehem, he said to them, L'shabbatot mishalem nezek shalem, for Shabbat he pays full damage, Liyamotachol mishalem chatzinezik, and for weekdays he pays half. So if we had this ox that was muad, and then he gored a fourth time, and we checked and saw the first three times were Shabbat, and the fourth time was chol, we would only have him pay chatzinezik, half damage.
Half damage for what?
For the damage he did on chol, in either hurting a human being or doing damage to another ox or whatever
so,
it might be.
So. Now they have proved that there is psychology to animals, right? So would it be full damage for the ox if he does particular animals? I mean, are they using the same psychology
for the other two as well? We said here in the Mishnah mm-hmm. that the law is that an ox can be mu'ad for a certain species, not a different species, for minors and not adults, for human beings and not for animals, we have this differentiation.
Why would the damages be different for Shabbat than for a chol?
It's just that he has to pay, if he damaged three times on Shabbat, he is mu'ad for that, it's considered to be forewarned, so he has to pay as a forewarned ox, which is always full damage. But if he's not forewarned,
okay.
Then he has to pay half damage. And if he did something that wouldn't be expected, like goring on Sundays, as opposed to goring on Shabbat, which should be expected because he did it three times,
right.
So the owner is less responsible because the owner was not forewarned for such a thing, didn't have to look out especially for such a thing.
Okay.
Right. So really, in the end, it's just the being forewarned three times.
That law never changed, right?
So that's really what it boils down to.
But the question is,
that's what I'm trying to.
Right. In other words,
I'm thinking that it really doesn't have anything to do
the
with Shabbat.
An ox scored three times.
The pattern, and then being warned three times, and whatever that pattern is, and whatever it is.
That's what the ox is forewarned for.
If you've been warned for that, then oh, I see. Because he could.
Let me put it in different terms, then you can speak.
Yeah.
Let's talk in terms of the owner of the ox. When an ox is forewarned, is muad, what that means now is that the owner has extra special responsibility to guard, so it won't hurt other oxen or human beings or other species. So now the question is, when my ox is forewarned, but I, the owner, know it's been forewarned for children, it's hurt three times children. So that then I know when I'm taking my ox across the street and a group of children passes by, I know I have to be especially careful at that moment. But does that mean I also have to be especially careful when a group of adults walks by?
Well,
that's the question. And the answer is no, I don't have to be especially careful.
No, because if the ox gores human beings once, only once, he's still tough.
If we're not talking about Rabbi Kiva,
no.
Talking about the
No, we're not talking about Rabbi
Akiva. Akiva. So an ox that gores anything one time or two times is not...
Is tam.
Is tam.
Yeah.
Right? So if my ox has gored kids, but it's never gored adults, then I don't have to be especially careful when adults walk by, but I do have to be especially careful when kids walk by.
But then the question is, okay, let's say the ox gored kids twice on a Shabbat. Once on a Yom Chol.
Ooh, very good. In other words, do we have... two categories at once. Mm-hmm. Can we say my ox is only muad for goring kids on Shabbat? Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's a good question. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure it's been discussed in the literature. I just don't know everything. Okay, so now, if we're still here, let's do an extra source. Let's do the Gemara. And everything in this passage from the Gemara, these two lines, in English comes out to be 7 or 8 lines, depends on one letter in the text of the Mishnah. So let's just make sure that you guys have the same text of the Mishnah that I have. Otherwise, this will be very confusing. Let's go back to the Mishnah and read the beginning of the Mishnah. Shor shehu mu'ad limino ve'eno mu'ad lish'eno mino. Translation, an ox that is forewarned for its species and not forewarned for its not species. Do you have the same text as I?
Yeah.
Every single letter is the same?
Yeah.
Okay. So now, I'm going to read the text and I'm going to leave out one letter. And please tell me which letter I'm leaving out. You have to look inside for this.
If you will, in a minute.
Okay. It's important stuff. Remember, we only have 15 minutes left in our class for the whole year. These are 15 important minutes. So I'm going to read the text. Shabbat shalom.
Shabbat shalom.
Mo. I said muad.
Yeah.
Mo. Shehu muad limino. Eino muad lishaino mino.
Ve.
I left out the ve, right? So now, do you think that would make a difference? If you had a text without the vav, would it make a difference? And what difference would it make if it would make a difference?
Love can be and or.
Right, it could be and or. And in this case, let's say it's and. What if that and was missing? Okay, so.
Should I say it?
Yeah, say it if you want.
I'm refraining.
Or did you look at the Gemara already?
No, I'm just...
Okay, say what you think.
It's from Hebrew, but maybe I shouldn't say.
Say.
Okay, if you say, Shor shehu mu'ad lemino ve'eino mu'ad le'sheino mino, there's the possibility that he can be either. But if you say, Shor shehu mu'ad lemino e'eino mu'ad le'sheino mino, that means if he is... how do you say, forewarned?
Yeah.
For his species. From here it follows that he's not forewarned for who is not his species. So it's one thing follows the other. There is no second possibility. It must be. It's exclusive in that sense.
Yes. Okay, good. And that's to a large degree what the Gemara says. Let's read the Gemara. Right, the Gemara says, again in Hebrew it's only 2 lines, in each English it's 7 or 8 lines. I'm going to read the Hebrew. I think this is pretty good though. You can follow it. Gemara. Itmar, it was stated, Rav Zvidamar vi eino muad tanan. Rabbi Zvid says that vi eino muad, with the vav, tanan, that's what our Mishnah text says. Now, this is going to be a machloket, not over spara, not over reasoning, a machloket over what is the text. What is the text? So I'm going to read again, Rav Zvidamar vi eino muad tanan. Rabbi Zavid said, Eino Muad, with the Vav, is the Tanan. That's the Mishnah, that's the text. Rab Papa Amar, Eino Muad Tanan. Rab Papa said, the text is Eino Muad without the Vav. So there's a different traditions here of what the text is. How could it be? Well, these texts were passed on orally. In most cases, they weren't written. And the question is, what did they receive from their Rebbe? With the Vav or without the Vav? Does it make a difference? Well, now the Gemara is going to say it makes a difference, a big difference. Rav Zavid Amar, we're going back to the first opinion. I'm repeating it, then explaining it. So in the Hebrew, I'm five words from the end of the line, after the period. Rav Zavid Amar ve eino muad tanan ha stama have muad, which means that if this text is ve, there's a vav there, that means that ha stama have muad, that means that in a parva case, and I'll explain what I mean, it would be muad. It's complicated, but don't worry, I'll explain. Rav Papa Amar Eino Muad Tanan. Rav Papa says it doesn't have a vav in it. Now the last four words of the second line, Distama lo havi muad. That in a parva case, it's not going to be muad. So what's going on is as follows. When we have this animal that is muad for its species, it gored three times an ox. And then we say that it's not muad for enomino, for its non-species. Does that mean possibility X or possibility Y? Does it mean that we saw it not goring other species? Or does it just mean that we don't know its position vis-a-vis other species? I was going to say that again. Do we mean to say that we saw it goring three times other oxen, and that we saw it three times not goring bunny rabbits? We actually saw it pass by the bunny rabbits, and it didn't gore them, so we can say that it is mu'ad for its species, and it's not mu'ad for its non-species, because we saw it being not muad to its other species. We saw the other species pass by it, and instead of goring them, it waved high and gave them a kiss. Okay? Or do we just mean that it's muad for its species, and we don't know what it does with other species? We saw it goring three times other oxen, and we don't know. We have no witnesses as far as what it does with other species. Those are the two possibilities. Again, the first possibility is we saw it not goring three times other species, and the other possibility is we just don't know. So given that, so now which is which? Which of the two possibilities I gave you is with the vav, which is without? Which is without? Let me get the chalk here. The marker. See if I can put this on the board. Right, so one case. So in both cases, we saw it goring.
That goes with the board.
We saw it goring three times another ox. That's a given. So it's muad for oxen. It is. We saw it goring oxen three times, and we brought it to court. But then, what does the second clause mean when it says it's not muad for other species? Does it mean that saw it not goring bunny rabbits three times? Or does it mean we don't know what it does with bunny rabbits?
I think with the vav.
Wait a second. We don't know. Don't write this. We don't know what it does for or with bunny rabbits. Okay.
I would say that with a vav is we saw it not goring bunny rabbits.
Right. If the vav is there, then the Mishnah is saying that it is mu'ad for oxen, and it's another observation, and it is not mu'ad for bunny rabbits. That's number one. That's
with the vav.
Whereas this case, we don't know what it does with bunny rabbits. So that means it's mu'ad for animals, and then no vav. It's just a it's just a statement that we don't know what it is for other things. It's not another piece of witness that was born in front of the court. We don't know. So, and then of course the halacha is that halachically we say if it now gored
an ox, it has to pay full damage. If it gored a bunny rabbit, it has to pay half. So in what situation is it? Do we say that that's the halakha? And we don't know. It depends on the machloket, the argument between Rabbi Zvid and Rabbi Papa. When we come to the conclusion it doesn't have to pay when it gores a bunny rabbit, is that only when we have witnesses that it didn't gore bunny rabbits before? Or is it even in the case we don't have witnesses? We just don't know what it does with bunny rabbits, and now it gored a bunny rabbit. The halakha is it only has to pay half damage. Is that because we don't know and have no witnesses for bunny rabbits? Or is it only because we know that it never gored bunny rabbits before? And you can see there's actually a big difference between these two possibilities.
So it looks like it's about time to end our class. So we will. Any questions, additions?
No. This is a way to read, to read the Talmud. I mean, to read our writings anyway, to pay attention to the vav, you're saying, because it can change.
It can make a big difference.
Something.
Mm-hmm.
So today's the last class.
Today's our last class.
The year.
Forever.
Oh my God.